Hello and welcome to another edition of the Purple Theory Podcast. My name is Grant McGalliard. I have alongside with me my friend, my co-host, Parker Fleming. Parker, I have great news for you, bud. We finally get to talk about TCU.
Amazing. I feel like this entire season preview series, we've just been ramping up to talking about TCU and like talking about other teams like we would talk about TCU. And so we flexed our muscles a bunch. We've learned a lot, but I am excited to talk about the team that we actually care about and on this podcast explicitly root for.
Someone on Twitter, I think, accused me of being a Kansas State fan earlier today. And while that's not like untrue, like I like Kansas State football as a concept. That's not what Purple Theory means, but
their fan base is on notice, though. I just want to let you know this happens every year. The random second in the Big 12 team that pops up every year, because it's different. The last couple of years is always different. Kansas State's fan base is on notice. They have already been annoying, and they are getting very close to moving from bro status to annoying status.
From bro status to Iowa State status.
Dude, you don't have to do it. You don't have to do it to yourself. You don't have to go comment 30 times on a poll I made asking about specific combinations of teams that might go to the Big 12 championship and say, none, Kansas State. When I said, which of these is most likely, not which is the most likely Big 12 matchup. Just stupid. Just asinine.
Deuce Vaughn can be Breece Hall. Don't you worry.
Look, man. Make it happen. Look, man. He only had three of those catches last year. Ooh, we're going to go hate and ask for the TCU podcast. I love that for the crowd. That's good. We got to get, I love that.
No. I like them too much. Parker, before we get into TCU, we're going to play a fun game. So you have not seen the AP Top 25 poll. Is that correct?
I legitimately have not seen it. Yeah.
Okay. So this isn't a lie. By the way, we're recording Monday night, so it's not like he's had a couple days to look at it. So the AP Top 25 is out, Parker. I'm going to give you a team and a number, and you tell me if you think they're ranked higher or lower.
So
we're
going to
play a little over-under.
Excellent. Okay. Okay.
All right. Okay. We're going to start with, is Utah at, the over-under is 8.5.
Surely
so lesser, like over.
Yeah. So you're giving me a number and I was saying, are they ranked higher or lower than that number?
Correct. Yeah.
Surely Utah is lower.
They're ranked higher. They're 7th.
Oh, okay. Dang. Are they the first Pac-12 team?
I know. They are.
Okay.
The Baylor Bears at 11.5.
Higher, but it's stupid. I bet they're 10 or 11, right? They're 9, 10, 11, somewhere there.
They're 10. That's correct. Yeah. They're 10.
Stupid.
Oklahoma is 9, Baylor is 10, and Oklahoma State is 12.
It's kind of like the coaches poll where it was the same thing where it's just like, we don't know. One of these guys is going to be the top Big 12 team, but we don't know which ones.
Yeah. Miami, we'll go 18.5.
I don't think they should start the season above that, but I think they are. Higher?
That's correct, Rick. 16. That's correct. We're going to do three more here.
Okay. I'm 1-2 so far. Or 2-1, sorry.
You're 2-1. USC at 11.5.
There's no way somebody has USC. They have the USC in the top 10. Under. No way.
14. That's correct.
Okay. That's still too high.
The last two we're going to do, it's way too high. The last two we're going to do are Texas at 22.5.
Everybody had to submit their votes before the injuries this weekend, right? Let's talk about that after the injuries. But everybody had to submit their votes presumably before the injuries this weekend. I would imagine Texas is top 20 just from hype.
Texas is not ranked. Texas is 27.
That is the AP poll voters galaxy branding themselves into being scared about the meat. Yes, we have reached full circle. That is amazing. Twitter now controls the AP poll. That is awesome.
And the last one is, did this school receive a vote? Nebraska.
Yes, Nebraska received a vote.
One vote. One vote. Exactly one. And it's Brett McMurphy, who I like, but there you go.
I mean, there are worse strategies in this click-dominated attention economy, Grant. There are worse strategies than give the biggest fan bases what they want.
You're not wrong.
I think this is the last time I'm allowed to talk about this because I'm going to jinx it past this moment right here. Grant, I want Nebraska to beat Oklahoma with my whole heart. I don't even care about like the football implications. I've never wanted a football win for a team I don't root for more than I want that to happen. It just, it'd be so delicious.
The just pure vitriol on Twitter that would spill for weeks. Just the massive amounts of cope that would be coming out of Norman. Oh, I shudder to think.
Yeah, golly. Okay, wait. So before we go to TCU2, Texas injuries, our Texas preview is screwed because Angelau went down. So their offensive line is no longer a question. It just sucks. And then Isaiah Nair from Wyoming went down and is out too. Also, A.G. Hall got freaking arrested like 2 seconds after we submitted this podcast. The officers waited for our podcast to download and then arrested Hall. So three guys we talked about, not going to be involved anymore. Redact that. Yeah.
Yeah, I have a buddy who's being on Inside Texas or whatever. He goes, you know, I got to be honest, man. The boards are like pretty happy. Like, you know, they think you were really fair. And I'm like, you and I both are like, well, that's a bad sign. And then as soon as we posted it, all that crap happened. And my friend texted me and goes, yeah, on second thought, we're going 6-6. There's no hope. I was like, all right. Well, we could record it a day later and just said the same thing.
Yeah, I just could have happened. Yeah, that's the way it goes here in the, you know, in the high-paced world of college football.
Mm-hmm. Well, I suppose it's time to talk about the Frogs, Parker.
I'm here for it. I'm literally right now typing a reply to Wayne Daniels, who is one of my favorite TCU football players of all time, who responded to one of my tweets. I'm typing a reply to him. I felt like that was worth interrupting the podcast for.
Thank you, Parker. Parker, did you know last year TCU was 7th in the country in EPA per pass?
I did.
I just wanted to start with that.
TCU's offense was like extremely efficient. And very bad at finishing those drives. Almost as if they had a lot of skill players, a really bad offensive line that they couldn't count on, and zero innovation in play calling. If only, Grant, someone had been pointing that out all along.
If only the Woodpecker size. I think it's Lewis. I can't pronounce that guy's last name. Just some holes.
Sachar?
Sachar? Sacker? I don't know. We should start with the priors. If you're listening to this podcast and you haven't been in a coma for the last 9 months, TCU is a new head coach. It's Sonny Dykes. He came over from SMU. And they have a new offensive coordinator, and it's Garrett Riley. It's Lincoln Riley's younger brother. As always, when we preview TCU, we split it into two, an offensive preview and a defensive preview. So we're going to do offense today and try not to think about the defense from last year. So, Parker, we're going to drill down real specific here, and let's go a bit with first principles from last year. What was TCU last year?
TCU's offense was like I just said, had some skill talent, really struggled along the offensive line. They were able to pass efficiently, but most of that was because they had a downfield threat who could catch any ball that was thrown to him in Quentin Johnston. And Darius Davis and Tay Barber came on pretty strong as kind of underneath options, as well as we'll talk about Blair Conright. Instead of listing just players, let's talk about some stats. They were 7th in unadjusted EPA per pass. When I adjust that, that goes to like top 40, still pretty good at passing offense in opponent adjusted terms. 42nd in EPA per rush, which stays about 42nd in EPA per rush on opponent adjustments. Grant, the key stat for me is they were 32nd in echo rate, right? In rate of quality possessions generated, opportunity rate, if you want to call it that. They were 96th in points per echo, Grant. So they were creating opportunity as well as anyone in the country, and they were squandering that opportunity as much as anyone in the country there. So a huge, huge failure of this offense once they crossed the 40. Also a dearth, an absolute dearth of big play touchdowns. Most of their touchdowns came through the red zone, did not come through big plays. There was an explosive ceiling on this team. They started in bad positions because of the defense. They were 97th in field position. 114th in percent of first downs on first and second down. They got to third down often, but because they had a really good third down success, they had a really good third down success rate, 16th in the country, because they had a really decent run game, and because Max Duggan run for your life is a really productive third down strategy, even if it's a bad first and second down strategy. So kind of an inconsistent, poorly sequenced offense. They averaged 63rd in points per drive on offense, 2.32. And if we look at their success rate in passing, 45.4, so 24th in the nation, but in rushing only 41.1, 60th. They ran a lot. They ran into the back of their offensive line and had zeros and stops frequently. So kind of a poorly put together mess of an offense that had a lot of ingredients to succeed, but really lacked consistency and lacked imagination.
I think that's a really great way to put it. And I think the imagination, I don't know if the incoming regime is what I would call overtly imaginative, but I do think they are quite less stayed in their ways as the old regime. Gary knew exactly what he wanted, and by God, he was going to find him the coordinators and the people and the personnel that would give him what he wanted. And what he wanted was a pretty lackluster product on offense, I would say. Gary was content with a system that clearly he should not have been content with, and you saw that on the field. So, Parker, it's like we're kind of just dusting the curtains a little bit. You know, we're airing them out. Hey, let's get some fresh light into this room and see what we have to work with. I do think it'll be a little more lively, if anything else, on offense this year, but we'll certainly get to that as well. There's not just turnover on the coaching staff, and we can certainly talk about that and pause if you want. There's turnover on the roster as well, and up and down, and there's some good players coming back. There's key positions you're losing and changing, but it'll be interesting.
Yeah, I was on the Talkin' Tech podcast with Albie Shore. I think they're part of the 1012 network on Thursday. And he asked me kind of like, how do I feel about TCU changing coaches? And I really equated it to Grant to like a semester change in college. You know, you'd get in kind of the dog days of the semester. You'd be like, man, I have to go to these same classes. I have the same schedule. Everything, all my semester storylines are kind of played out. But I have that hope of like next semester, I'll get a new schedule and I'll start fresh. And like, we'll be able to kind of be the master of my own destiny and get my life in order. Yada, yada. All the lies that college freshmen tell themselves after they screw around freshman semester. That's what I feel like a little bit, is like the semester starting anew. And I have some agency as to the type of student and person and college student that I'm going to be.
If I could just get a B minus in multimedia reporting, I swear to God, I'll be a good boy next semester. And credit to Aaron Chimble, 79.95. Got it done, moved on to the next semester. Yeah, you're right. There's promises abound, right? Listen, we did some bad crap in the last couple of years. We're going to fix it this year. This is us turning over a new leaf, man. It's a new day in Fort Worth.
Yeah, we did this really poorly segue-wise, because I'm going to read some basic stats and then one terrible stat. And then let's talk about losses and go. But we're just meandering through the TCU offense here. We don't really have an agenda. Grant, 2,512 rushing yards, 2,800.
Sorry, can I just interrupt to say, we were just meandering through and didn't have an agenda. It's very reminiscent of TCU's red zone offense last year.
Yeah, perhaps an homage to TCU's red zone offense, we are meandering and aimless this podcast. TCU, 2,512 rushing yards, 2,834 passing yards. They rushed on 62.2% of early downs, Grant, which was the 107th slowest offense in the nation. Really, really wanted to run the ball, was really afraid of passing the ball, which is kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, Grant. If you think passing is bad, then you run the ball a lot, and then you find yourselves in a lot of disadvantageous passing situations. And you have to then pass in poor situations, which often result in bad outcomes. And then the cycle begins anew. So kind of a downward spiral there. 19 passing touchdowns for TCU, 21 rushing. The average third down distance was 7.39. So we talked about that with Texas. Very similar to the middle. TCU is a lot better on third and fourth down success because, again, Max Duggan running for your life is a great recipe. One stat to kind of talk about how poorly they did in the red zone, because I think that's really... I mean, you look at the West Virginia game and the Kansas State game, multiple scoring opportunities. At the half, they were going to go for it on fourth down, and then they called a timeout and kicked a field goal right at the half, like against West Virginia. I mean, just some awful stuff there. But when they had a scoring opportunity, So once TCU crossed the 40, they had 210 such drives where they had a first down inside the opponent 40. Mm-hmm. 27.6 of those were field goals that were made. 33.8% of those were field goal attempts. So more than a third of the time when they crossed the 40, when they had a first down inside the opponent's 40-yard line, TCU was kicking a field goal. 9% of the time they had a turnover on downs. They went for on a fourth down and didn't get it, which in theory I'm okay with, but the poor play calling, like I think about the West Virginia game that specifically they ran some kind of speed zone read option and there were three defensive linemen in the backfield on fourth and one before the play even developed. So I like the aggressiveness, but the design, they ended the half eight times. Grant, eight times TCU had a first down inside the opponent's 40 and they ended.
That can't be right.
Well, that's the end of the half and the end of the game.
No, I know. So, but I just meant like, holy hell, is.
So that's only 3% of drives, but that's just absurd. They punted seven times when they had a first down across the 40. They fumbled four, and then they had a blocked field goal three times. So just that's a graveyard. That's just absolutely dead bodies everywhere. Someone call the police chief. There's been a murder. It's just awful.
You only played 24 halves. That's one out of every three halves of football ended with TCU having the ball and not doing anything.
I believe it, honestly.
So I'm stuck on that stat. That is absolutely
absurd.
Absurd. But you were right. It's TCU almost tried to be aggressive at points. You mentioned getting turnovers on downs, but they tried to be aggressive and didn't know what to do with it. It's like a little kid that has no game plan. You know, your little cousin trying to beat you up, just kind of running at you and swinging. It's like, well, if I just put my head on your hand or my hand on your head and hold you at an arm's length, you can't hit me. And that's what defenses did to TCU, when they tried to go for it on fourth downs. Anyway, it was very frustrating to watch. Probably the less said, the better, but that's what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, kind of against the axiom of this podcast, but it surely can't get worse than it was last year with the assembly of skill talent and how poor the offensive line was. Surely it can't get worse. Famous last words. TCU, honestly, returning 82% of production, and most of that production is lost in three players. Really, there's only three players who are lost. One of them is Zach Evans, who transferred to Ole Miss. I think I want to talk about him in the running backs, and we'll opine and pontificate. But a big loss, highest rated recruit in TCU's history, circumstances notwithstanding, and a very good player who should have a productive career if he can make everything work together. Obina Easy, who was kind of TCU's mercenary left tackle, he went as an undrafted free agent to the Lions. I think he kind of played himself out of a draft spot at TCU, which is unfortunate because at Memphis he was generating some buzz, but really, the guys around him weren't great and really just did not look good in a lot of situations last season. So there's potential to upgrade from the left tackle.
Easy, I thought, was actually decent. It just, he had no help.
Yeah.
There was no, if he was ever put on an island, there was no one beside him that was going to step over and make him look any better. So that was a tough situation
for him. I don't explicitly have running back blocking down here, but I'm going to write that down when we talk about the offensive line. RB blocking. I'm making a note right now because I want to talk about that as well with Easy being on island.
Yeah.
And then Coy McMillan played a lot more guard than I thought. He played in almost every game and he started seven games. That's how bad the situation was. Like Coy McMillan, he's a good dude and a solid like backup rotational player. But the fact that he started as much as he did last season, really indicative of the state of TCU's offensive line room and the ability of the offensive line coach to coach up new guys into what they're supposed to do, that he had to rely on a guy who's been there for like 7 years to play, even though that guy's not as good as some of the younger guys. So that represents the 18% of production that TCU lost, more or less. And really, I mean, obviously losing Evans hurts, but it's really kind of understandable that those aren't huge losses for TCU.
18% of production, and McMillan was 60% of appearances on media days on Tuesdays because Patterson threw him out to the reporters every single week. So, yes, very nice guy. Hope he's doing well.
Yeah, I think he just ran out of eligibility. Yeah. So, but so there's no like transfer or anything. Like, thank you for your service. Yeah, come back to alumni weekend. Heck yeah, man.
Yeah, we'll talk about Turnpike. We've done it before.
Are you sure he's not a member of Turnpike? I think we've done this bit where he's the most likely member of TCU to be in a country music band.
Yes, I think easily he is. Parker, we have to go to a topic that's going to make me sad for a minute.
Before we do this, I just want to say I called Sarah McLachlan's people and they would not give us the rights to Arms of an Angel for this podcast.
I might just do it anyway. We said we were going to do it for someone's career. It wasn't Max. It was somebody else. Anyway.
I thought it was Max. I thought it was Max.
It was Max. I was trying to delay it. Yeah, so look, Chandler Morris is probably going to be the starting quarterback this year.
Yeah.
Like all signs point to that. He's running with the ones in practice. Good. You know what? I'm glad someone separated themselves.
Absolutely.
So if it's, there you go.
Chandler's skill set and his profile is definitely more suited to what Dykes has made sense of in the past. I think I've tweeted and retweeted that stat a million times. Like Tanner Mordecai had 10 designed runs in 2021.
Yeah.
That's not an offense that's going to be tailored for Max Duggan. And, our complaint for the last couple of years has not been that, necessarily like, The quarterback hasn't been the issue the last couple of years. I think we've been staunch defenders of like Max Duggan had a ton of potential, but also Max Duggan wasn't ever developed in any stretch of his career. He was also put in terrible situations from day one. And we knew that his career was in doubt. I think I had a glimmer of hope. Not that I'm like, oh, I want Max to be, I mean, I want him to succeed, but I also want the best quarterback to play. I want TCU to win. And I like the kid. I had a glimmer of hope that Chandler Morris didn't separate in spring ball. And then at the beginning of the fall, I mean, there was really a lot of uncertainty, but it does look like Chandler has kind of settled into a rhythm. And I mean, the big deal is the highlights started being Max throwing screens and Chandler throwing the ball downfield. And you're like, yeah, okay. All right. I see what's going to happen here. I'd almost talk myself into Max starting like the first game and then Chandler taking over. But that's because I've been conditioned by Gary Patterson to believe that you should beat your quarterback up and demean his confidence. And you don't have to do that. You could say, this is my guy and we're going to win. So that's great. I think I just rambled for a lot. I'm going to stop talking for a second. You hop in.
No, it's offensive coordinator or offensive analyst Niccolo Machiavelli is no longer prowling the TCU sidelines, so we're allowed to say, hey, Chandler Morris is the starting quarterback.
Every single quarterback at TCU is like that scene in Gladiator where Joaquin Phoenix like steps forward and then stabs Russell Crowe in the side before he goes into the arena. That's just what TCU did to quarterbacks like every year until now.
For fun. Like they got enjoyment out of it. So that is one kind of prescient thing, and you and I were talking about beforehand. Dykes doesn't really rely on quarterbacks running the ball. Chandler's not a very big guy. He can scramble when he has to. I'll put it this way. He's not a reluctant scrambler, but he's also, especially against Oklahoma State, was forced to run for his daggum life and got a little bit of taste of the Max Duggan experience. So there's going to be a lot fewer design runs, zone reads, speed options with Morris at quarterback. They may look like zone reads and he may fake take it, but they're not going to be actual reads just because he's not as good of a runner and Dykes doesn't need him to be.
Yeah, no. And if Morris has a ton of rushing attempts, they'll be scrambles and that will be a bad thing. That will be more about the offensive line than Chandler Morris. Things I like about Morris, I think we saw in the Baylor game that he's able to hit the second read. He's not afraid to throw over the middle of the field, which I think that he probably has a better arm over the middle of the field than Max Duggan does. But also he hasn't had 3 years of being conditioned that if you throw over the middle of the field and you make a slight error, we're never going to do it again, which is the weight that Max Duggan was playing underneath. You look at kind of his distribution of attempts in his couple of games last year. Morris, 22%, 20 yards downfield, 30.3%, 10 to 19. I mean, that's just a really nice and quarterback friendly spread. He got the benefit of one, some positive energy from, Gary Patterson being fired, and two, a Baylor team that really was not on top of their game for preparation for TCU, but he executed great. He extended plays and is a really exciting dynamic player. I think that he would be, I'm not sure that Oklahoma would have Dylan Gabriel if he had never left, right? Like he probably could be starting at Oklahoma this year.
Well, yes, but he also would have been developed.
Yeah.
By Lincoln Riley.
Right.
Like, Duggan could have been developed by Lincoln Riley, and, you know, who the hell knows? I mean,
maybe. I think that is a more extreme claim about Max Duggan than I have ever made.
Shut up. We should mention
counterpoint. You're stupid.
Counterpoint. I hate you. We should mention number three on the death chart is Sam Jackson. Hell yeah, Sam Jackson. This is a Sam Jackson podcast. We have completely flipped. Purple Theory supports Sam Jackson 2023. It's on.
It's look. I'm trying to grow as a person. So the first time that Chandler Morris throws an interception, I'm 50-50. I'm not going to do this, but I thought I was going to be 50-50 between a put Duggan in or put Sam Jackson in. But here's the thing. If TCU kind of sucks this year, I don't know why you're not seeing what you have in Sam Jackson. Because if they suck this year and it's not just the offensive line,
the last three games are Texas, Baylor, and Iowa State. If you don't already have four wins, put Sam Jackson in and just let him get some
reps. If you're
not
playing for bowl eligibility in those last three games, yeah, let's see what happens there. But really fun, really dynamic player. Sam Jackson probably has a cannon, which no TCU quarterback has had since Boykin. And I don't I'm not comparing him to Boykin. Like, I've seen a lot of comparisons that are pretty lazy about, like, oh, Sam Jackson's like Boykin. I'm saying, like, Kenny Hill had his strengths and weaknesses. Cannon is not a word I use to describe Kenny Hill. Sean Robinson didn't have a shoulder. Max Duggan, a cannon is at least aimed in the right direction. Max Duggan was just kind of like, we're gonna hit the side of a barn. I just don't know which side. And
it was a trebuchet.
Yeah, exactly. So
yeah.
But he's really fun. I am interested to see. It would be really fun to me, Grant, if TCU had red zone packages and trick plays that involved a quarterback who could throw the ball and make reads in process, as opposed to snap it to a running back and hope he finds a hole like the Wild Frog. Mm-hmm. So I'm at least encouraged by that. I think the verbiage around Jackson from Dykes is that he does not want Dykes to transfer. Dykes does not want Jackson to transfer. I think that if Jackson was a nobody, Sonny Dykes would not be saying the things that he's saying about him. But he is definitely giving him praise, saying, you're in my development pipeline. I'm at least going to consider you for the future. Yeah. Don't leave. So that's great. I think TCU, if Chandler Morris gets hurt, TCU has a couple options behind him that are good. They also have a offensive mind who wants to score and who also has shown a history of, hey, I can get different guys involved. And so not the end of the world if a quarterback gets hurt. I also think that the jump from Duggan to Morris in terms of like potential quarterback play doesn't mean TCU's offense is like top 10 in the country versus bottom 10 in the country. It's marginal at best. And so depth is good because TCU could still have a pretty decent season if there was an injury and one of those two guys had to step in. So I feel as good about the TCU quarterback room as I felt in a really long time. Is that unfair?
No.
Tell me my feelings are fair. Tell me, validate my feelings, Grant.
Well, I wouldn't say they're not as good as I felt like August 2020 when the world was my oyster and Max Duggan was going to win the Heisman at the end of 2021. But in terms of a holistic room and maybe without some rose-colored glasses, yes, the depth is good. I'd be happy with any one of those three taking a snap. It's not like the last couple of years where, and again, no offense to these players, they did their duties, but like if Downing or Collins was in, I was going to be a little bit nervous. Now there's at least three guys where I'd say, you know what, screw it. Yeah, let's see what happens. Let's make some plays. My dog's name is still going to be Max Duggan, so nothing that happens this year can change that.
Yeah, I understand that. The official good boy of the Purple Theory podcast. Grant, do you have anything else about the quarterbacks? I feel like we're minimizing quarterbacks, and I really don't mean to do that. That's the conversation we've had the most, and it's going to be Morris, and I think that's a good thing. And he's so unknown that we just got to see what happens.
Yeah, it's we will know more after the first 2 weeks.
If TCU's season is an absolute disaster this year, I'm going to go on a limb. It's not going to be because of who they started at quarterback. I do not think this year, barring some extreme event, you are going to hear me say TCU needs to bench Chandler Morris. Like I agree.
But I think a room that may be a little bit maybe more interesting just in terms of a huge hole to fill will be the running back room. Parker, we should talk about Zach Evans. Zach Evans is really freaking good.
Yes.
Like really, really, really good at playing running back for TCU.
His potential as a running back is as good as any brand name running back you can think of in college football. And he has a dimension as a pass catcher, which I think is entirely unexplored. Grant, if I talk about the Zach Evans wheel route, do you know what I'm, you can envision the specific play. And TCU ran it three times. One time, Max Duggan underthrew it. The second time, Max Duggan overthrew it. The third time, it connected and it was beautiful. And they never ran it again. They just did not run it because they did not trust the middle of the field. And they were so conservative for their own good. Zach Evans is a pass catcher, I think, is the dimension at TCU that they did not explore. He's a big loss.
He's going to be so fun at Ole Miss.
I think that's a great situation for him. I think culturally that's probably a better fit. And I am glad that TCU was able to give him a spot to get into the NCAA and prove that he could belong. Yeah. Like that was a question when he was getting recruited, and TCU took a risk and he took a risk and it worked out well for him. And the coaching change was a good transition. I think we knew halfway through the season that he was gone. I think earlier than that.
Yeah, for sure. But I think that, but probably there was some mishandling there. Listen, I mean this in no uncertain terms. If you're getting a bag, go get the bag, homie. Yeah. Like, go enjoy Oxford. I'm rooting for Zach Evans. I think he's going to be really fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you're highlighting something here that really shows how important he was. 23% of attempts, 23.8% of touchdowns, 25.7% of yards. TCU's got to replace all that.
Yep. And that, Grant, that includes all of Max Duggan's runs. And scrambles and stuff, that's not filtering out like just for running back attempts. So he was a huge part of that room. Even if the perception is that he didn't play a lot, I think a lot of people think, oh, he took himself out or had conditioning issues and all that. Like, he still was second in the team in attempts despite only playing in six games.
Right. And so to that point, like, yeah, we don't know what went on behind the scenes, all that. Should have been more. Honestly, if we're going to have Zach Evans on the roster, why is Amari DeMarcado getting at rushing attempts?
Why is he a lot of questions? Look, Grant, here's my goal for the running back room in 2022. Amari DeMarcado does not lead the team in attempts. I don't care what happens at the running back position, as long as DeMarcado does not lead the team in attempts. That's absolutely absurd that they continue to play him at the expense of Kendre Miller, at the expense of, I mean, they lost Foster and Barlow because they kept giving
snaps. Two guys
snaps.
That I love.
Yeah, they kept giving snaps to DeMarcado and wouldn't develop those guys. One more point on Evans before we talk about the two running backs who should lead the room and should be decisively number one and two by a long shot. I'm also okay with a college athlete kind of sniffing the wind or seeing the tea leaves and being like, dude, you're not going to run me 40 times a game to try and save your season. Like, that's directly going to get my NFL earnings. No, I'm not running 21 times and a half and coming back after halftime because you can't figure out how to put a defense together. Dang it. You got to edit that. I'm sorry.
Just keep going.
You can just cut that word out. That's fine.
I will. It'll be very funny.
The defense.
But I'm leaving all of this in.
This is great. This is great. I got excited there. The running back room, though, despite losing Evans, I'm not trying to minimize that. I'm not trying to do what I've seen like a lot of Baylor and Iowa State people do, which is like, oh, the new guys are actually going to be way better than the old guys. Like, TCU just has a good running back in Kendre Miller, and they brought Imani Bailey over from Louisiana. Two very solid options. And Sonny Dykes at SMU has done a really good job of saying, we're going to pass until you give us a light box and we're going to run. Both of these guys are going to be put in favorable positions to run really, really well and not, you know, not run on first and 10 against eight guys in the box, which is what TCU has been doing. I think both of these guys can be very productive and give a really nice kind of 1-2 punch, fresh legs split of the carries in the backfield.
Does Imani Bailey qualify for built like a brick outhouse territory?
Dude,
He's built like a fire hydrant. He's 5'9", 200.
We have to adjust this. Yeah, I think TC says he's 5'9". I've heard that he's like 5'7 and a half. I don't know. I can't judge that. I haven't seen him in person. I've just heard that I don't think he's 5'9". But he's close to 200 pounds. Yeah, dude. That counts. He is. Absolutely. Honestly,
so
I think he might be
butterball
status. Yeah, I'm very excited to have a guy like this.
And he was good last year. I mean, he... I mean, Louisiana has a really fun offense. He got 642 yards. That was third on the team. 6.3 yards per carry, 8 touchdowns. I mean, you could read the base stats, but listen, who wouldn't want that on their team? Like, he seems a really great player. He played at Denton Ryan High School, which is a Texas powerhouse. I'm sure I probably watched him play once or twice in high school. His Twitter handle is eTheBeast, which is sick. Like, I'm all in on Imani Baylor. Like, he and Kendra Miller are going to be really fun.
Love some confidence there, and love him as like a short yardage kind of bigger back. I think that Kendra Miller kind of gets a reputation for yards after contact. He averaged 5.06 last season, and he had 420 of his, 600 yards came after contact. Mm-hmm. But Grant, I do believe that he had two long runs, one in the Texas Tech game and one in a game that's escaping me, where he got hit like lightly at the line and then ran for 70 yards for a touchdown. And so that kind of inflates those numbers. I think he has great open space ability, and I'm interested to see what he will do as a running back in the passing game. Hear that. Not getting split out in the slot and replacing someone who should be out there in a spot, but actually as a running back in the passing game. I think that you talk about the air raid concepts and how important that running back wheel route or that running back flare route is under your progressions. He can be very productive in the run game as well. This is probably the time to talk about running back blocking and kind of segue us into blocking, and then let's end with wide receivers. But
that works because it was really bad last year.
Kendra Miller is not a good run back, is not a good pass
blocker. None of them were good.
And Imani Bailey is at least big and can maybe some of that was like missed assignments. So I went Zapruder on this, like film frame by frame, because I was just so worried about like, why is this running back look so bad? And some of those plays, Grant, were like, it was front side zone step, backside man. And the backside man just didn't block anybody. And Kendra Miller's like standing there with two guys running at him. Sometimes linemen will do, like offensive lines will do a split where they shift to the right and they let the running back go pick up like the rushing end so that the running back is hitting a guy who's like 215, 220 pounds, not trying to block the like 290 pound nose tackle. TCU a lot of times shifted around where Kendra Miller had to block like the 290 pound nose tackle. And I don't expect a lot out of him from there, but a lot, I mean, there was a lot of poor situations, but the running back pass blocking was really bad, especially with considering that TCU had to have a tight end and a running back on every single pass play to kind of shore up the offensive line. It was real bad.
It was like noticeably bad. To the point, like, I've never played running back. I'm like, I think that's not how you're supposed to do that. But, but I don't know. Maybe it's just a new technique or something. But as you said, I will say a lot of times they just had many people running at them.
Yeah.
And that size difference can't be overcome. Parker, last year, the TCU offensive line was the worst unit on the field, I would say, on either side of the ball.
I don't even have to ask what game, because you mean every game. Like,
that's what I mean. Yeah, so like bad. Season long, they were the worst unit on the field. There's not going to be a lot of shit. Well, there's going to be two positions that change up front.
Yeah.
Easy is not there anymore. It's going to be Coleman, probably at left tackle. Left guard, probably Wes Harris, maybe John Lands. Was it Michael Nichols? It looks decent there. Maybe you might see some time.
I would love a world where Coleman could play left tackle and Nichols could play left guard, and then next year Nichols could shift out. Because Nichols is like long freak, like should be the left tackle of the future. I think in spring they floated him being left tackle this fall, and he is not ready.
No, which is fine. Stick him inside and just kind of trying to minimize damage. Alan Ali comes over from SMU, likely going to play center there. Our boy Steve, I think, is probably too talented to keep at center. They'll move him to right guard. And then right tackle, I guess Andrew Coker, man. I don't know.
I'd rather have Andrew Coker at right tackle than left tackle.
Correct.
Alan Ali last season played...
Ali, excuse me, my bad.
Well, I don't know. I'm just saying it. He played center for the first five games, and then they had some injuries, and he moved around. He's honestly a lot like Steve. He played left tackle, right tackle. I think that the reason that you would put Steve at guard is that frees up... Grant, I've been watching some SMU film here and there just to see the offense, and one of their favorite pass pro things to do is to run a split zone offense and give the quarterback three or four steps outside. And I think that Steve and getting that guard center combo of Steve and Ollie, and Ollie did it a lot last season, to kind of pull out to the left while the whole line steps right and they just have to crash block down. You get two guys coming around and gives you like kind of a mobile pocket. They're really clever about that. And I think that Steve's a lot more mobile and maybe a better blocker than Ollie. I think Steve could be an NFL interior offensive lineman, probably not a center, but definitely a guard, and he's mobile enough. I think this is a really smart move. Either one of those guys at center or guard, though, is going to be responsible for kind of that pass block pull. And of course, pulling in the run game, we're going to see a lot of, you know, split zone. And I think between what Lance has done, he's earned some respect, and Harris's potential, you know, he struggled with injuries, but I think that he's really earned, like, that interior offensive line is going to be good, which in the last couple of seasons, it's going to be good regardless of coaching, and coaching with Ricker is going to be way better. Left tackle scares me, terrifies me. I think Coker at right tackle is going to be fine. Left tackle, terrified.
You touched on a point that we probably should have touched on earlier. Getting a new offensive line coach is going to be the single biggest improvement for TCU from the offseason.
Just having an offensive line coach who actually coaches offensive line, like, huge.
Yeah,
it's akin to Iowa State hiring a special teams coordinator, which they still have not freaking done. But it's just huge. Yeah.
Yeah. If you know, you know, but we can't stress enough how poorly TCU's offensive line has been coached these last couple of years. And now that is changing. I will say, Coke, I feel like I harp on Andrew Coker a lot because I do. Last year, he gave up 3 sacks. He had 18 penalties. He had 13 other hurries. Or it's not 18 penalties. Jesus, 8 penalties. And that was all from the right tackle position.
I believed 18 at face value.
Well, I know. He needs a lot of work, dude. Like, a lot of work.
Well, look where
Maybe now that he has an actual coach, he can get one. But
yeah. I mean, look where his penalties were concentrated. Like, the West Virginia-Kansas State game, and then he had 3 against SMU. Like, SMU, he was responsible for a Max Duggan interception because he had 2 penalties on 2 consecutive plays. And then TC ran the same middle of the field play twice in a row, and Max Duggan threw an interception on that one. Just really bad situation. I think the key for the offensive line here is just minimize the negative plays. TCU did pretty well rushing last year, but pass pro was so bad because they had to have extra guys in there, and that limited the passing game. And then your quarterback's running around for longer, and the routes aren't developing because there's not enough guys. They just have to be good enough to give the quarterback a little bit of time to make a read. And I think they will be better with coaching. I think that'll go a long way. The talent isn't my favorite. I think the pipeline's better. It's worth pointing out, I'm gonna break one of my rules and say something about a kid here. Garrett Hayes has been a damn disappointment, man. It is really evident that he has competitive disposition issues. I've talked to a couple people who know, and asked this question to multiple people, and it appears that he just doesn't have that dog in him, if we want to use some parlance. Mm-hmm. And that's disappointing because he's a very high-rated recruit. Could still pan out to be a good, you know, get in the strength and training program, find that fire a little bit. But Grant, you and I have talked about the lack of hate-and-ass offensive linemen. I need somebody to be nasty.
Yeah.
And I'm optimistic that Ollie can be a little nasty. He's got that little spark plug in him. Maybe Bailey at running back, being a little stouter, being a little chippy, could inspire that. But I mean, there was a couple times last year where the quarterback got tackled and there's 5 linemen standing around just looking. And that is old man. That is like old man nonsense, old school football stuff. But dude, you got to hit somebody.
Yeah, that made my blood boil. It happened multiple times too. Like, I would say that, oh yeah, I remember the game. No, like at least once a game, someone was picking themselves up from the dirt. Ugh, makes me mad. Parker, we need to move on for the interest of time. Is there anything more about the TCU offensive line before we go to the wide receivers?
It
should be a lot
so
more fun, I will
year.
Say. It was really bad. Parker, the starting five, or, sorry, the 5 linemen that played the most snaps had a combined, I had to do higher math, 28 penalties.
Jeez.
26 penalties, sorry. 26 penalties.
Jeez.
If only they had someone to freaking coach them.
Okay, let's watch the taste of her mouth and talk the freaking wide receiver room, which is maybe, I'm going to say something crazy, maybe the deepest position group that TCU has ever had.
There's so much talent, man.
It's so deep.
So much talent.
Oh, it's such a good problem to have. There are just so many good guys here.
We can lead off with Quentin Johnston, who, think about what we said last week about Xavier Worthy for Texas and apply a lot of the same stats. I'll read it because you read it last time, but he had a 20.5% target share for TCU last year and a Power 5 receivers in 2022 who averaged 13 or more yards averaged at the target and had more than 6 yards after catch per reception in 2021 with a minimum of 40 targets, if you've got all that. It's Xavier Worthy from Texas, Jaden Reed from Michigan State, Zay Flowers from Boston College, and Quentin Johnston from TCU, and his ADOT was 3.5 more than Zay Flowers in second place. Parker, Quentin Johnston is a dog.
He's that dude. He is an NFL guy. He might actually be a round one guy, not like Jalen Reagor was a round one guy. He might actually be a round one guy. I mean, he is one of the most talented wide receivers to come through TCU in a long time. He is every bit. He has a higher ceiling than Josh Doctson. He is.
And that he's taller, yes.
Well, physical higher ceiling, too. Just talent and everything. I mean, he is an absolute insane talent. TCU fans should absolutely appreciate him. The offense for him the last couple of years has been throw the ball to him and hope he catches it. 36.8% of his targets were contested last season. No, excuse me. He caught 36.8% of contested targets. 31% of his targets were contested. Grant, that's not about quarterback play. That's about design. Literally, it was one-on-one, but teams were slinking the safety over because TCU didn't have any way to punish him for doing that. It was two-on-one. It was just throw the ball in the area and let him catch it. I think that Quentin Johnston has a ton of untapped potential if he can get the ball in space. What does Steve Sarkisian say about Jalen Waddle? You and I and Jalen Waddle are the same speed standing still. Quentin Johnston and I are the same speed. If he's jumping straight up and I'm standing still, I can't jump that high. If we could get Quentin Johnston the ball moving the right direction, I think he could be just, I mean, he's going to be great, even if it is just throw it up to him. But if they can scheme him open and let him have some space, man, that is just absolutely insane.
Yeah, I mean, there's, of the position groups, he's the most clear 1A. No, he's the dude. He is everything you want. TCU has had a couple of those guys. Like you said, Reagor probably would just use him the right way. Dotson, obviously Josh Doctson. You can go back to the annals of great wide receiver at TCU. But QJ, I think, is the first guy that's had a ton of dudes behind him that both have experience and maybe kind of really exciting freshman. Parker, you are so high on Jordan Hudson. Tell me about Jordan Hudson out of Garland, Texas.
I think he's so fun, Grant. I think that he could be the true third way that TCU has been missing. I don't know if you remember the Bill Clinton third way nonsense about how we're going to, you know, find a new way for politics. We're not going to be right or left. We're going to, you know, you have to filter a lot of the Bill Clinton out. Not the extracurricular Bill Clinton, the politician Bill Clinton.
The Purple Theory podcast makes no official statement on the presidency of William Jefferson Clinton. Go ahead.
Except the saxophone's freaking cool, man.
It's awesome.
Jordan Hudson could be the third way. TCU has had a lot of, let me get you the ball behind the line of scrimmage and hope you make some plays, or let me get you the ball way downfield and hope you catch it and we get some yards. Jordan Hudson could be the guy that is that short to intermediate actual threat that frees up everyone else. This could be rising tide lifts all boats. He's a four-star at 247, four-star composite. On three has him as a five-star for whatever that's worth. His scouting report, man, just gets me excited. He gets good extension to maximize catch radius. So get the ball on his zip code. He's going to catch it. He's a good run after catch player with impressive short area suddenness. He strings together moves in the open field. This is the one that gets me. Effective chain mover in the short to intermediate passing game. Man, I'm telling you, you got QJ deep, you got the fast guy short, you got Jordan Hudson in the middle, pick your poison. I can get behind this vision.
Effective chain movers, like, if I ever release a rap album, I think that's what I'm going to call it. That's such a great designation for a wide receiver. Like you said, like, okay, we can have QJ as the big play threat. We have Darius underneath. But hey, I need 8 yards. Where's Jordan Hudson?
He could play the role that Blair Conright has played the last couple of years admirably. where Blair Conrad is like the possession. Oh, shoot. It's third and eight. We got to find the guy. He's going to catch it and get out of bounds. Except that he may not get out of bounds. He may run for 10 yards after it. Like,
which, can we give Conrad his flowers real quick?
I think
we need to talk about Blair Conrad. We dogged Blair Conrad. That's because we had no idea who the hell he was when he burst onto the scene in 2020. And by burst onto the scene, I made like three catches for 10 yards each. He has been the most reliable set of hands. There's a mean quote about an old NFL running back that I won't say, but it's basically, if you need 3 yards, you give him the ball and he'll get you 3 yards. And if you need 20 yards, you give him the ball and he'll get you 3 yards. And that has been Blair Conrad. And by God, good for you, man. Like, he has carved out a niche and I hope he still gets some playing time.
And he's a great segue into kind of the bench guys, right? Like, without mentioning, we're going to talk about Darius Davis and Tay Barber. But the guys that aren't going to, you know, quote unquote, start, the guys that aren't going to be on the first reps, Quincy Brown, Blair Conrad, Savion Williams, who has an untapped potential. Savion Williams will be a decent in a college wide receiver if it kills us. Chase Jackson, redshirt freshman, who has just insane talent, really, really well respected out of Oklahoma. Caleb Medford's a guy that might be around. Gunnar Henderson, the Fort Worth freak, many people are calling him this. Who had a really good spring and was involved kind of in the underground and slot game. I mean, I think there's just so many guys back here that could be so many effective weapons. It's really exciting to see a room this deep of guys who could all play roles and play meaningful roles and give you options to just do a lot of different things.
Henderson was legit, like, shifty in the spring game. I know that's against the TCU defense, but
I don't want to look at like a small white time, guy.
He wasn't. You know, well, what adjective would you like me to use? He played well in the spring game. Granted, against it was in the spring game against half the B team defense. But you know what? Like, that's better than some other people played.
Playing well in the spring game is better than playing poorly in the spring game. I'll tell you what.
That's true. That's true. I'm always saying that. Tight ends as well. There's potential. You highlighted a couple guys. But we should talk, too. I forgot. Darius Davis and Tay Barber. Did we say enough about them? Barber, there's a really good piece in Dave Campbell's Texas Football Magazine. Mike Craven wrote it. Love Mike. Go read it. Just like, he has really been a loyal TCU guy. He's stuck around through some tough years, and he's performed well when asked.
Quietly productive. Really gives you a really good intermediate option. I mean, these guys are really similar. Combined for 93 targets. That's 31% of TCU's targets last year. They both played greater than 94% of their plays in the slot. Davis had an ADOT of 11.6 and a yards after catch of 5.4. So he was a little bit more, let me find it in space and go. Barber was 14.6 ADOT, 3.6 yards after catch. He was getting a little more downfield. We saw that glance RPO to Barber a couple times last season. We'll see it again, I think. Both of them, just brutal speed, shifty, 1-2 punch. Barber's put on a little bit of weight. He's rocking 190 now. He's a little stouter too. So that should help him with contested targets in the middle of the field. I mean, these Hudson and Johnston represent kind of the explosive ceiling of the TCU offense. Davis and Barber are kind of the workhorse. Like, if TCU is consistently getting first downs, it's on the back of these two dudes.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see how Riley and Dykes move them around. I think they're going to come up with some really cool packages for those guys. And there's options, too, and this is when I'll make an actual transition. Tight end, Jorquavius Spivey, 6'5", 245. Is that Mississippi State in 2020? Didn't do much last year for TCU. And then Jared Wiley comes in from Texas, 6'7", 255. Hey, man, if you want to throw the ball up, we got two dudes that are, just reach over opposing safeties and catch it.
Grant, I bet 60 FBS teams have a worse red zone plan than throw it to the 6'7 dude.
And he's a good athlete. He had 20 receptions total at Texas in 3 years. As you noted, he's mostly a blocker, but hell, man, I don't know. Design something, get him open.
I think he can play and should get some play at receiver. The big thing to look at is, again, we're looking at kind of a shift in philosophy here. Last season, TCU tight ends had, I'm counting off the top of my head, 11 targets last season for TCU tight ends. Hmm. And they only passed 297 times. SMU passed over 400 times, but they gave 17% of targets to wide receivers. That was 78 combined. Excuse me.
Tight ends, you mean.
Tight ends. 78% of targets to tight ends. That's 17.6% of targets to tight ends. 78 of their 442. So tight ends should be a lot more involved in the pass game. Spivey, it wouldn't surprise me to see him kind of be that big flex wide receiver. Wiley, I bet we'll see him a little bit more in as well. At 6'7", if they're going to run split zone, I don't know what it looks like for a 6'7 man to pull and hit somebody. I'm interested to see. But we could see some play from Denuso and Ware in the run game if neither of those guys can kind of get the split zone kind of blocking down, just body type wise.
Plus, Carter Ware is a senior this year. So
he is.
Got to maximize, yeah, the
last and his knee is okay. So, yeah, we'll see.
Good. Yeah. Good, good, good. Okay, Parker, is there anything else before we get to our listener questions? Because we got a lot.
I think we'll do listener questions this week, and then next week when we do defense, let's do our schedule predictions and everything.
I love that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because, I mean, we really just asked about the offense, too. So. Yeah. There's a lot, so let's get through it. Shehan Jeyaraja, not familiar with his work. Well, first off, you asked, what do you expect from the TCU offense in 2022? Biggest obstacles and potential breakout players. Shehan expects them to be well-organized, explosive at times, and streaky. A lot of good concepts to build on. They'll be limited by quarterback fit and tackle depth. Wiley and Spivey will have breakout potential. Just look at how many tight end wide receivers they've got now. We can write for CBS News. It's not that hard. You basically just said what we said.
Journalist isn't even a real job when you think about it.
It's really
in
not.
Like 5 years, AI is gonna do it all. So
they already do it for the Associated Press. Like robots write game recaps.
I might not be allowed to say this, but that's okay. No one's gonna listen to this. I had been approached this fall about doing something with my stats previews, and someone was pitching me that in a couple, like next season, we could get to a point where a computer could look at my stat preview graphic and write an article based off of it. How terrifying is that?
But they wouldn't have your flair, Parker.
Well, that's great. I don't care about my flair. They just need content. But like, how terrifying is that? They're like, hey, I can look at a graphic and write an article as an AI. Terrifying.
Did I tell you? I saw one of the Boston Dynamics dogs last week or last month. It was like robot dogs.
Have you seen that episode of? Yeah, of course it did. Have you seen that episode of Black Mirror where like the whole thing is she's running from one of those robot dogs? Yeah. Oh, hate it.
Horrifying. Colin Post says just has Jordan Hudson and then the stock emoji going up. Correct.
Agreed.
Yell MK, expect is tough. He has no idea what to expect, but something palatable to watch. It doesn't have to be high-flying breaking the dachshund, but I am hoping to be dazzled. Give me 7-5 with a good time, and fellas, we're cooking. Okay.
Grant, there's a knot that's been in my neck for like the last 2.5 weeks. At the thought of TCU going 7-5 this fall, it just relaxed a little bit.
That we have all been the gladiator in the tunnel getting shanked before they got to the arena. Riff Rambazu 23, Funky Town Frog. He goes into defense a little bit, but who predicts TCU to be top 20 when OU comes to Fort Worth and TCU Baylor will host game day?
Do
Interesting.
It. Do
Let's
it.
Let's do it. I'm down.
Six wide receivers every 300 yards is ambitious.
300 yards. I know. I'm
there for it.
I left that one out.
Ooh, buddy.
It's kind of sick. Funk Hefe at Dino Consult. Indicators of success are a team that throws more than runs it, especially on early downs. Can we stop the run? Can we spread the ball around? Can Dylan Horton be dominant off the edge? Can the quarterback make quick, decisive reads? And can you win the red zone on both
win
sides?
Win the red
of the
zone.
Ball?
Points per quality possession, man. Can that be more than a field goal, please?
Or a turnover on downs or end of half or whatever.
Yeah.
Aaron Sanchez, front of the pod. Give me 3 hours on Sam Jackson. Hey man, that's an off-season project. Adam, TC Lotus Leaves. I expect an improvement over last year. I can't deal with another bad offensive line. Buddy, neither can I.
Yeah, yikes, man. Oof.
Let's see. Throwback Frog. Expectations, more yards and points go burr. Obstacles, defensive line softer than a Lubbock Cactus.
Okay, that's fake news. Okay. We'll talk about that. That's fake news.
Yeah, that's be excited, folks. Andy Swain 5. Expect tons of scoring from an offense that really wasn't that bad in 2021 and now has a coach that actually wants to play offense. Thank you,
Andy,
for listening, Andy
welcome
Swain.
To the Purple Theory Podcast.
Andy Swain, our listener of the week. The biggest challenge is, and has been for several seasons now, offensive line play. Correct. Clint Foster, friend of the pod, expect fun. Obstacles to fun include losing, but I do not anticipate that at this time.
Has there been a fun TCU season since 2014?
No, and who says you can't lose and have fun? We like Kansas football.
Exactly.
Tommy focused on the defense a little bit. He says obstacles will be stopping the run, but expects Gunnar Henderson and Spivey and Savion Williams to keep the eye on offense.
I want Savion to be good. Man, freaking, come on, dude. He just needs to be good this year.
I know. A couple more. Terry Bonon, the surprise of the Big 12, weapons all over, a running game that became the best in the Big 12. Okay, all right. An offensive line that was remarkably stronger and more athletic than last season, and better coaching at quarterback. Okay. All of that, I would say, could be true. Could be. There is a world where that is true.
Sonny Cumbie is a fine quarterback coach.
He is. But you know. let's see. What else do we got? Oh, it clicked away. I got an email.
I've got Matt Kofelt, avid listener. I'm moving coast to coast, but made sure to make it in time to watch week zero. Do I have a problem? No, Matt, you don't have a problem. And then he said, TCU's offense, the best wide receiver room in the league, and no clue who will be getting them the ball or how good the people protecting that person will be. Cardiac arrhythmia is his prediction for this fall. Look, I don't want to go like there's this cringy like middle school 3 Days Grace song that says pain because I'd rather feel pain than nothing at all. I'd rather have cardiac arrhythmia this fall than what we've had the last couple of seasons from TCU. So give me something to believe in. Yeah.
Easily. Guitars, Cadillacs, etc. Shout out to Dwight Yoakam. Concerns, or is the offensive line really improved, or is it just hype? Please throw it to Quentin a million times a game. And pick a QB. Well, I think they've picked a QB.
I think they have picked a QB. Yeah. Also, shout out to Junior Wanamaker. That's Guitars and Cadillacs handle.
Yeah.
Which is a shout out to Louis Grizzard's childhood friend, Wayman C. Wanamaker Jr., which is just an excellent reference.
Levels upon levels. And finally, we'll end with Jarrett Gillum. If the QB situation is healthy, I can see 8 wins. It will be interesting to see a new approach after 20 years. Won't it, though? Although I will say, Gary did put in a new approach. So it was just in 2014 was the last time he bothered to do one.
Yeah. I think I have three more, and two of them are like we'll actually talk about. One of them, Max with a lot of X's, Turner. Should I be ready to be hurt again? Similar to what we just said.
Yes.
I think you're going to get hurt this fall, and that's going to be a good thing. Brian Nenninger asks, where does this wide receiver group rank in the Big 12? Grant, earlier this offseason, I did a podcast on the 10-12 with Philip, and Ian Boyd joined us, and we ranked the Big 12 wide receivers. I had TCU at second. Where do you have them? Behind Texas.
So I realized on the podcast when we did OU, I said OU may have had the best wide receiver room in the Big 12. I would like to walk that back.
We're talking ourselves into it. Who cares? I don't care.
We're talking us into it. I would say Texas, TCU, Oklahoma in that order.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah. I think Marvin Mims is the best wide receiver in the conference. I think, but
which makes your room really, really good. And if they can figure out how to scheme those other guys open, they might have the most productive wide receiver room in the Big 12. That's not unreasonable. He also asked another really good question. If Sonny Dykes' offense traditionally struggled against Joe Gillespie's defense, how will the Frogs beat the 3-3-5? I think that's a great question because Sonny Dykes definitely hired a guy who would beat him. SMU has lost, 1, 2, 3, 4. Of the seasons that Dykes and Gillespie were both at Tulsa and SMU, Tulsa is 3-1 against SMU. And all of those are one score wins. So a very frustrating opponent. I do think it's good that TCU went and hired a guy that had frustrated him because maybe it could frustrate other people. 3-3-5 is definitely the zeitgeist. We're going to move into an era where TCU's defense is not an industry leader in innovation. They just might be good at execution. And so that'll be a little different for TCU fans. But to ask how... to beat the 3-3-5. One, that would be a great question for Vass. Maybe I can get him to do like 20 minutes for us on the defense or something. But you have to be able to effectively run the ball against 3-3-5. You have to have offensive linemen who can pull and create vertical lanes. And TCU has two guys, Kendre Miller, who has some breakaway ability, and Imani Bailey, who has been described as really, really shifty horizontally, who are able to find holes in chaos that's how you beat the 3-3-5 is you get a mass moving one direction. You have a running back who can read it going downhill until they creep up, and then you can exploit them over the top. TCU has the talent and depth to do that in a way that I don't think an SMU Dykes offense has ever had. And so that's optimistic. They also have reps in practice every day against a really, really good 3-3-5 mind to kind of punch, counterpunch, pull things out, work things out. So I kind of hijacked that one, but I think that's a really good thing. That, Grant, is the kind of things we want to be thinking about and having our listeners think about as we watch football this fall. That's a great question.
Right. And I would say putting a bow on that too, if you want to be able to, you know, exploit when defense creeps up and hit them over the middle. Oh, I don't know. Chandler Morris loves throwing over the middle, and Jordan Hudson can get, it's like a 12 yard A dot machine. Put him over the middle of the field and just let him freak, man.
Yeah.
Just let him get wild.
TCU 2022,
let him freak.
Hold on. I'm going to go tweet let him freak real quick.
Parker, this has been the Purple Theory Podcast. We will be back next week with the defensive preview for TCU, but you can find Parker on Twitter at StatsOWAR. And the BetUS show is up this week, or is it up next week?
Yeah, we're going Wednesday this week, Wednesday next week, and then we're doing twice a week on Tuesday, Wednesday. So make sure you just hit subscribe. I get a little help there, and you'll never miss an episode. And we're doing win totals this week, and I created a new model for it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
If you're listening to this on your normal routine on, I guess, Thursday morning, we recorded this Monday night. I don't know if I'm putting this out tomorrow morning. I don't know if I'm putting it out Thursday morning. Be surprised. Who cares? If news breaks, we didn't know about it. It's not our fault. You can find me on Twitter, at Grant McGalliard, spelled like it sounds with all those vowels. Until next time, go Frogs.
Go Frogs.